Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, this will be a fun one.
Yeah.
Today we got with us Alan Reed. He is with M3. They are an accounting software platform, I guess. Is that correct? Or how would you describe it?
That is correct. An accounting and business intelligence platform specifically for the hospitality industry.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about how this has come about?
Certainly. We have been hoteliers, or I had been hoteliers for many years. And back in the mid-1990s, we were looking for some type of business platform that could give us a little bit more insight on what our financial performance was that was specific to the hospitality industry. We looked wide and far, and we really couldn't find anything. So we figured we were enterprising people. We would develop our own system. So back then, I don't know if everybody can remember it, Y2K was coming out. So people were developing new systems. So we decided to develop a system of ourselves that would be intuitive to hoteliers, because we'd been in the hotel industry for years, literally decades. So we figured we kind of knew what the industry wanted. So we built a financial accounting platform.
So now, what is the challenge from a hotel standpoint that makes it different than, say, like a advertising agency or, you know, a retail store, a yogurt shop?
Yeah, that's a great question. In the hospitality industry, there's certain benchmarks, measurements, ways that we look at business, and we know if we're having a financial performance that's desirable. Everybody can bring in revenue, but bringing that revenue down the bottom line is what's the hard part. So we knew hotel acronyms such as REVPAR, which stands for revenue per available room. So when you go to your typical out-of-the-box accounting company and you say you need a report that presents this type of data, you have to spend half the day explaining to them exactly what it is, the information you're looking for. We already knew what the information was. So and that's one of the reasons we've been so successful. In the history of the company, we've never had a month that didn't outperform the previous month. And it's because we're entirely a growth company. But hoteliers are seeking like-minded people, very small group of people. And so we interact well with each other. We know what they want. So we could deliver exactly what a hotel was looking for.
Is one of the challenges the fact that the room rate can be varied dramatically depending on what is the path into the hotel?
That's one of the many significant factors. Room rate is a key player. But there's an old saying in the hotel industry: is higher and higher went the room rate, and lower went the occupancy. So our package, it helps you do that balance between whether or not you're getting the right rate and achieving the right occupancy. You want to bring your rate up and your occupancy at the same time. Start raising your rate too high, people stop coming. Mm-hmm. So our tools help hoteliers have insight into what's going on with their financial situation and react accordingly.
Now, when you say hotelier, is a hotelier defined as me, I'm an entrepreneur and I have one hotel, or am I like one of those big chains that you see?
It's all of the above. The basic hotelier is anybody that owns one to many hotels. And we call it the hospitality industry, and a hotelier is somebody that actually owns a hotel or is involved in the hotel business. One of the big box people is going to be called a franchisor, but a hotelier is going to be somebody that actually owns a hotel.
And then does a hotelier typically own one hotel, or do they own, like, I could own a Holiday Inn, I can own a Marriott, I can own a different kind of I don't know what they're called, the brand,
the different franchises is what they're called. And So nowadays, back in the early days, you got into one brand, you got into Holiday Inn, you got into, and then Marriott came around. But in today's society and the way hoteliers are doing, they could own one hotel, but most of them own multiple hotels and they own multiple brands. So you may own a Holiday Inn, you may own a Marriott, you may own a Starwood.
So I'd have a portfolio.
Correct.
Of different kind of brands.
That's the correct word. And one of the key things we were able to do is bring all those different types of portfolio differences into one central system, so people could see how they were doing overall as an industry.
Because each one has their own idiosyncrasies of how they operate?
Absolutely correct. One person may have, whether or not they do the rewards, if you're a member, rewards member,
right,
that you get those redeemed one way, and another entity does it a different way. And being able to keep up with that, it becomes very cumbersome unless you have a common tool that allows you to look at them.
So your platform allows me to have kind of a dashboard so I can see all the different things, kind of speaking one language rather than each one's individual language?
Correct. We've evolved through several different versions of what we have. We have one tool now. We call it Insight, kind of a play on hotel inns, but it allows you to bring all that into a common dashboard where you can see your guest comments. You can see how you did last night from a revenue standpoint, how you did from a profitability standpoint, from one hotel type that's an extended stay to one that just has people that's just a business hotel or a leisure travel hotel.
Does it expand into like resorts where then the services would be even more robust?
Correct. When I talk to potential clients, I tell them our smallest hotel that's on our system is a one hotel owner that has a 12-room chalet up in Breckenridge. And our largest client has over 120 hotels and has a hotel that has over 1,200 rooms. So the adaptability is what hoteliers are looking for, so that they aren't forced into having to go to one website and look up their information, go to another website and look at that. Hoteliers, they want to take care of guests. That's typically what a hotelier is. And when you talk about hotels, they're people that, you know, they're in the hospitality industry. They're in the mindset of I'm taking care of people. They're coming here. They're entrusting their leisure or their business with me. I'm going to take care of them. So they don't want to focus too much on the financial and the accounting, but they want to make sure they have an insight, know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you launched this, the first iterations, were they built around kind of the single hotel? Or were you always looking to scale to, you know, all the different hotel options?
So we call it multi-unit. So we were always focused towards a multi-unit. At the very beginning, we were a DOS-based system. And as I was mentioning earlier, back in the 1990s, we were looking for a better tool, a better wheel. And we started developing this thing in a single unit entity. And then this thing came out in the mid-90s, which people just take it for granted now, but it was called the Internet. So we were developing that tool, and the Internet started coming out around 95, 96, and robust. We redesigned our whole system to work on the Internet.
So and then at that point, it became more cloud-based rather than kind of software-based?
Absolutely. We were one of the first cloud-based entities back in the mid-90s, early 90s. And I tell people, it's kind of funny, back around 98, 97, I had to go out and just convince people that the Internet was not just a passing fad. So on radio, people can't really see, you know, I'm older or younger or anything like that. But, back in the early days, people didn't know that the Internet was something that was going to stick around. We made a bet that it was, and it's really paid out for us.
So now your service is a software as a service?
Correct. It's all the same thing. Back in the early days, we called it ASP, Application Service Provider. Then it switched to Software as a Service, and now people call it Cloud Computing.
Mm-hmm.
Basically all the same. So we have our own private cloud. We have data centers located throughout the Metro Center, and we warehouse all our applications and our data on that, and it's basically a private cloud.
And then because it is cloud-based, then whenever there's updates, all that happens seamlessly to all your customers?
Correct. So a customer is using our system. They do their work all day. They go home. They come back the next day, and it's automatically updated the next time they log in.
And then from a security and backup standpoint, that's taken care of as well?
Correct. We're in what's called, there's tier three data centers where we have an audit every year. We do penetration testing where people try to break into our systems. In today's environment, if you're not being proactive.
Right. Those are table stakes nowadays, right?
Correct. Yeah. You have to do that.
So now, how has it been kind of growing up here in Atlanta, right? You've been here in Atlanta?
We've been in Atlanta since, 1980s, 1990s.
Right. So how have you seen the technology kind of world evolve over those years here?
It's been amazing what's happened in Atlanta. Atlanta is going to be, in my opinion, the second Silicon Valley. We really see a shift of technology here. You've seen the movie industry move over.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're starting to see the technology. Back in the mid-80s, I tried to come over to Atlanta I wasn't yet in the hotel business, but just trying to get into computer science business. And I couldn't find a job over here because it just wasn't the right time or the industry wasn't evolving. But now we're seeing all these incubation centers, these opportunity zones like up in Gwinnett County where they make it economically advantageous to you to open up a tech center. And so you're just seeing a complete change and a migration of the tech industry moving to the Atlanta in the greater Atlanta area. And it's one of the reasons that we located in Gwinnett County, specifically Lawrenceville, is because we did a demographic search and saw where, you know, a lot of the people, where they live and where they would like to work. And that was one of the areas that we saw, and it's worked very well for us.
And then so you moved into New Digs pretty substantial, right?
It was. We spent about, we took an older building and we spent about 8 or 9 months completely renovating it. We made it the more open space environment. We put in white noise where, you know, so even though it was open space, people could still work without being interfered with each other. We really focused on the employee. We put in a complete exercise facility. People like LA Fitness, I don't think they like me around there anymore because everybody that had these LA Fitness subscriptions, they canceled those and they're using our own gymnasium now. So it has showers and lockers in it. We have a break room that has billiard tables and shuffle boards in it. It has a video arcade system in it. It has a big communal table because we really want everybody feeling like more like a family, which I think is the environment businesses are working towards. And people ask me how many people I have working for me. I say I have, you know, 200 families that work for me because we really engage with each other and we try to make it as hospitable a place, sort of like hotels. You know, we're in the hospitality
industry. Right, you're
industry.
In that industry, so you got to kind of walk the walk, right?
Correct.
And now, so, when you're coming up, when you're kind of growing the business and you've been through kind of the history of the internet, pre-internet even, how important was it to get the culture right? Was that always a top of mind? I got to get the culture right. I got to get the right people in here. I got to get them kind of motivated and looking forward to coming to work, not just, you know, kind of punching a clock.
Sure. Culture has always been at the top of our mindset because, in my opinion, if you take care of your employees and your people, they're going to take care of your customers. So you have an internal customer and an external customer. If you take care of your internal customers, they're going to take care of your external customers. So we've always been employee-centric. We take a certain amount of the profits of the company and give them back to our employees each quarter. We also, I always, even at the beginning back in the 1990s, I was very liberal on paid time off. If you're a new hire at our company, you start off with 3 weeks of paid time off day one. Mm-hmm. But I hired lately a young lady, and we called her an employee ambassador. And she kind of renamed herself to the ambassador of fun. So her whole job, all she does is the culture of the company. She set up young professional groups, employee resource groups, book clubs. We have a coloring book club, people that put puzzles together. So we try to stay focused on the employee. And I had a customer that came and he toured my business. He says, "You don't really have a business here. What you've developed is more of a campus style atmosphere." Mm-hmm. And so that was the atmosphere we tried to push.
Now, do you see yourselves as a technology firm, a fintech firm, a hotel firm? Like, how do you kind of define yourself?
That is an excellent question because obviously we have tens, 20s, 30 developers. We have support people. We have people that came out of the hotel business. I've been in the hotel business since the mid-80s. I've probably got at least a dozen or two people that have been in the hotel business. So the developers are always telling me, I need to decide whether I'm a tech company or I'm a hotel company. And I said, no, I'm both. I'm a hotel company that drives technology. We try to say we make hospitality companies successful through technology that drives financial performance. So we try to marry that hospitality and hotelier and technology in the same and create a very user-intuitive environment for the people that are using our products.
Now, are you seeing, because part of what your software does is keep track of money, right? Financial, which is the lifeblood of these organizations, are you having to deal with some of these new types of money, like the cryptocurrencies and things like that?
We do not. The hoteliers, you know, they take a look at that, and hoteliers like to stick with what they know. So we can deliver that technology, but the cryptocurrency, the Bitcoin, the blockchain, that stuff, you hear it all the time, but nobody knows what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it? What
so
is
that's
it?
Still early for that industry?
It's too early for this industry.
And but it's something that if it were to get traction and to stick around, that's something that you would get involved in?
It's just money is all it is. So you just it's just right. recording the transaction. We could definitely figure that out. But it's just a different type of currency, and it which is something that we're also looking forward to as we're developing our product to be more global and work in today's environment.
Now, because of being a global, now you're a global company now?
Correct.
So now in global, there's a gazillion different payment processes. It's not just MasterCard and Visa. You know, when you get outside of the country, that a lot of countries don't even accept those.
No, they don't. When you get outside of our country, I mean, Europe has really made a technological leap forward. One of the things that really surprised us when we went over there is they don't print checks. They do everything electronically. Mm-hmm. So basically what we call, like, you have your paycheck automatically deposited into your checking account. All their vendors are paid like that over there. So we don't even print checks over in Europe because everything's done electronically. So there's really only about four or five banks you have to deal with over there. And if you can transfer those funds through those banks, you're good. So it's a lot of electronic transfer of funds. We don't see that as much over here in the United States because there's just so much regulation involved in it. I would say 98% of our business in the United States is paper check. And 0% of that over in Europe is paper check.
What about in Asia?
Asia, we haven't ventured into yet. I get a lot of people asking me. We just haven't made that leap over there. Basically, we're over in Europe, Canada, South America at this point.
Now, how are you getting your clients? Do you just by word of mouth or like happy, you know, as the hotelier expands, they bring you along for the ride? I'm sure it's pretty sticky, right? Like they don't want to have a second one.
That's a great word. We try to make it very sticky. But how we first got introduced over there is we had a client that had domestic hotels, and mm-hmm. they decided they wanted to go offshore and look at something. So they brought us with them when they went offshore. So we were able to introduce that way. But then it's just we've been cultivating that business. Scott Watson, my executive vice president of sales, and I have been going over to Europe for about the last 4 or 5 years to their different trade shows, introducing ourselves to people over there and talking to accountants and hoteliers. And that's sort of like how we got in the business.
So when you go to a trade show, you have a booth that shows like demos of the software where they can see how it would work?
We do not. We just the one-on-one person going overseas, you can have a booth, but it's very it's not something at the level we want to be at yet. We do a booth here at a local, used to be in Atlanta all the time. It's called High Tech, but it's in a different city each year. So domestically, we do a booth. When we go over there, we just do one-on-one interactions, and we set up, we make sure we have certain people to talk to before we get over there.
Mm-hmm. And then, but you're presenting, are you speaking, are you talking about like your experts in this industry? Are you doing speaking in the around that?
We have done several speaking engagements. We've been on some panels where they ask, you know, you basically open it up for questions and answers. We've done some speaking arrangements where we speak on our expertise on a certain subject. So and those panels and those speaking engagements are golden when you can get those. And you just have to, it's through repetitiveness when they see you there and they see
right.
your name.
You got to have that ubiquity, right? You got to be there all the time, and then they think of you when it's time to discuss this.
Absolutely.
Now, what's the pain that they're having where they're like, you know what, those M3 folks, we should really talk to them?
As I mentioned before, is if they're not dealing with us and they're dealing with just, you know, your...
So they're doing... Right now, they're using something, right?
Correct.
They're not going from nothing to you.
You would be surprised.
Really? What, they got a box and a
some
piece
of
paper?
You know, Excel spreadsheets, a lot of them. A lot of them are using, and you know, and I try not to do, you know, QuickBooks. I see.
Oh, right. So one of these larger kind of brands that mm-hmm. are kind of just kind of generic for business in general, but not specific. Maybe they have little add-on, little kind of plugins, but your thing is built through the eyes of a hotelier.
Correct.
Which probably makes you unique in the market, I would think.
It pretty much does. It's very tight market. There's not a whole lot of people that do what we do for hoteliers. And so when I see people using, you know, you see a hotel and they're doing, you know, millions of dollars of business and they're doing it through Excel spreadsheets, we're like, we can make your life so much easier.
Right.
Because we're going to allow you to have insight and visibility in what you're doing. Basically, those people at the end of the month, and it works for some people, they're just working on cash flow, but at the end of the month, they count to see how much money they have, and that's how they know.
They hope it's good, right?
They hope it's good. You know, and hoteliers, you know, we're good at taking care of our business, but we're not so good sometimes at figuring it out all the way to the bottom line.
Forecasting and things like that, where your software probably helps.
Correct. You know, your franchises, they will give you revenue forecasting tools, which is great. It's nice to know how much revenue you're going to have. But what we do is we help them to forecast how much money they're going to spend.
Right. It's not just the in, it's the out, right?
Correct. We help them with their labor analysis, with their purchases of their different products they've got to buy to keep the hotel running on a day-to-day basis so that they know at the end of the month if they're going to be profitable or not.
So now, what do you need more of?
What do we need more of? You know, we hire 5-6 people a month. It's incredible. We're
So every week, someone new is joining the team.
Correct. They may be a programmer. They may be a business analyst. Could be somebody in customer support. Could be actually, you know, my HR department's been getting big, but we also do professional services for accountants. So we probably, our biggest department now is probably accounting. We do outsource accounting for some of these hoteliers. So we tell them, you know what? You go run your hotel. Just let us do the whole accounting side.
Really?
Of it.
So that's correct. Did you anticipate that going in?
We
or did that
not.
Kind of was the customers like, hey, can you already know all this. Why don't you handle that?
Correct. We just started that business probably in the last 3 to 4 years, and it's grown to be the biggest employee-wise department that we have. And it was a local hotelier here in Atlanta approached us and said, hey, you know, we're really good at running hotels, and y'all seem to be really good with accounting. Can y'all take over our accounting? And we said, interesting thought. I researched it, and I hired some accountants, and we did it, and we've been very, very successful. It's been one of our fastest-growing product lines that we have.
So now how does that work? Do the accountants, are they going to your office in Gwinnett, or are they local in the market that the hotels are in?
Currently, they come to our office in Gwinnett. So, but with our product, as I said, it's cloud-based. They can do it from just about anywhere. So we have a few of our accountants, some of our senior accountants that work further out in the north, east, and west regions of the state. They can do their work
out of their
home.
House.
Correct. And then maybe once or twice a month they come
just
in.
Just come in.
Yeah, for month-end closing, things like that. So it's worked very well for us.
And that's probably really attractive to a lot of these CPAs. You hire CPAs as the accountants?
We have probably about 4 or 5 CPAs, but we hire a lot of staff level accountants. We hire a lot of people out of college. We end up this summer, we just had 8 different interns, and probably about 4 of them were in the accounting department. So, and I see it as 2 ways. One, I'm paying it forward, helping these people get their foot in the door. And two, it's recruitment for me so that, you know, they've worked for me, they've seen me, and then that, and when they graduate, they come work for us. So Gwinnett College has been a tremendous help for us up there and delivered a lot of people for us. We were up in Gainesville and Bernal. We got several people from that college as well. So when you ask me about, you know, how technology is done, so from both an accounting and a technology standpoint, Atlanta has just been a blessing for us.
So you're really leaning into this partnering with universities.
Correct. We're in about 30 or 40 universities where we provide our software free of charge. We started this about 10 years ago. We didn't get a lot of buy-in from it because we just gave them the software. And
right.
We said, hey, this is for your restaurant management.
Because they have
students.
Majors that are in hospitality, right?
Correct. So they didn't buy into it. So then we went out and we developed a curriculum for them. And once we developed the software
so now
and
it's
the
turnkey,
curriculum,
then correct. It's like they just plug and play, right?
Correct. So like I said, we're in about 30 different universities. We're actually even in a university over in Turkey that saw our system. They're up in New York, and they said, hey, can we have that? And we said, sure. Well, you know, I don't have the Turkey translation yet. It's in English. And they said, that's fine. It's just, again, I see it as paying it forward and a recruitment process.
So now, as you're growing, you're in Europe now, so you're looking to expand all over the globe. Is that
correct? And
it's just a matter of time, right?
Yes, I try to be a bit conservative on the growth, although we grow every month, as I said. But, you know, we want to make sure we do it right. We go in the market. We figure out exactly what their needs are, because their needs over there are different from our needs.
Right.
Over here, you were talking about the franchisors earlier. There's not as many franchise hotels. There's a lot more independent hotels.
Right.
So it's not necessarily mom and pops, but people that have been doing this for 30, 40, 100 years, 150 years right. over there. And so we go over to that market. We find out exactly what they need. So the hardest part is talking to them, finding out their needs, and then finding out what their pain points are and try to relieve
those
pain points.
And then just kind of adapt your solution to whatever their pain points are.
Correct.
And that's the beauty of coming with a hospitality background. You're there to serve. That's kind of in the DNA, right?
Correct. And a lot of times they'll come up to us and they'll say, what is your best practices? And so one of the things we can offer not only is software that's specific to the hospitality industry is we've been doing this for decades, literally right. decades. My partner, John McKibben, with McKibben Brothers, his grandfather started hotels back in the 30s and 20s. So we've been able to parlay that knowledge into our system as well. And so people will say, well, we've been doing it this way. Is there a better way to do it? And if we see a better way, we tell them. And if they're doing it very well, we'll say, you know, what you're doing is working good for you.
Now, having hospitality as part of your DNA, do you spend time kind of creating a community among the different hoteliers where they can share best practices and create kind of a think tank of all the hospitality?
Absolutely.
Just the different ways they work together? Because I would think that they would like that in terms of they're service-minded. So they're always looking to help, and they always want to know kind of, hey, you're doing this in Europe, this might work here in Wichita, you know, like mm-hmm. there could be ways for them to even work together.
Yeah. About every 18 months, we have what we call it a partners meeting or a users meeting. We bring all of our customers in to a central location. Last year, it was in Phoenix, Arizona. This year, we're actually doing it here in Atlanta. We've rented out the entire Lake Lanier complex, and we're bringing all our customers in. All they have to do is figure out a way to get here, and we put them up, we feed them, we house them, and then we just have this big networking center. So they all these different controllers, managers and things can get together and network and see how each other are doing things.
Like a users group.
Exactly. It's a big users group.
Wow.
It's one of the things our customers love the most. And then myself and my partner and all of our executives, we'll sit up on stage and just do an open panel and let people just ask us questions. Where's the product going? Where do you see the industry going?
How to get the most out of it, right?
How to get the most out of it. We just let people just fire away and ask us questions.
And that's why you grow every month after month, right?
We hope so, yes, correct. Like I said, we've never had a month that didn't outperform the previous month in the history of the company. And I think one of the reasons for that is since 1998, when we started the company, we've never had a price increase.
So it's the same price.
It's the same price. And I joke, I tell people, I say, I was either ripping you off back in 1998 or you're getting a really good deal
right.
now.
That's amazing.
So I told a local payroll provider here that was trying to raise their rates on me one time. I said, we don't raise our rates because there's no way you can do that. And I said, well, as a business philosophy, we try to find new money from new customers and trying to find new money from our existing customers. Now, we do provide new products.
Right. And new services.
But we just don't, it's just not in our mindset as a hospitality company to always be increasing prices.
Right. So now, you're looking for more talent, right? Because you said every week somebody new is joining the team. And that could be in a variety of areas. So where would someone go to learn what opportunities are there?
We list them all on our webpage. It's www.m3as.com.
And that's the number three, the letter M, the number three, as.com.
.com. And then you go to our careers page, and you can see that there. And it's kind of funny because people ask me, where did M3 come from? I think you were asking me about the name of the company. And when we first started the company back up in 1998, we needed to come up with a name. So, we resorted to M3, but it was born out of, that's the turn of the millennium. And so it was going to be the third millennium.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody in the company could figure out how to spell millennium on a consistent basis.
And so no one would be able to type that in the URL.
So we shortened it to M3 and said, well, we'll change the name later, but it just stuck because it was such a catchy name.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more about your service, the same m3as.com, they can get a demo or they can play with it a little bit? How does that work?
They can't play with it online, but they can set up the request for a demo. Mm-hmm. There's contact information for my sales department, and you fill out an online form, and somebody would reach out and contact them. And depending on, you know, your locality and stuff, we may either go to you and visit you or bring you here to our office. We just had somebody from Canada we flew in to visit our office last
week. Okay, so when they're in doing an install, this is a very high-touch kind of onboarding.
Correct. When the company first started, there was only six of us, and I was one of the people that helped train people. And I would go out to the hotels and train the people, mm-hmm. and it wasn't probably the first 2 or 3 months. I said, this isn't working. We've got to, because it's got to be much more hands-on. So we bring the people out of their offices to our office here in Gwinnett and train them for a week, hands-on. And when they leave, the system is completely ready and set up for them.
Now, who in the hotel is the buyer of this typically? Is it somebody from the accounting department or the CFO?
It's usually the CFO, because accountants don't like change. I mean, they don't like change. So we've got to reach out to the CFO or the CEO. They've got to see that this is an innovative product that's going to change the way they do it. So a lot of times we tell people, you may not necessarily need a new software. You need a new policy in the way you do business. So if you plan on doing business the same way you've always done it with our software may not help you.
Right.
You've got to make an institutional change, because what we're doing is we're making you much more efficient by using our tools. If you're not interested in being efficient, you probably don't need to use our software.
So then the buyer has to know that this is kind of going to be a major change management situation when they're doing an install of this.
Correct.
In order to get the most out of it.
Right. And we'll work with them before they get there, saying, you know, you probably need to change this. You need to change this. This is going to become much more efficient. You can push this off to the field instead of doing all this in-house. Mm-hmm. It just helps people become more efficient.
So then the good and the bad of that is, the good is that this is going to make them more efficient. The bad is this change is going to be a little disruptive and a little uncomfortable. So you got to kind of work through that.
That's the fear a lot of people have, but we always work with them. Very rarely has anybody, you know, we come in and, you know, we say you need to eliminate 20% of your staff. You either through attrition, those people may do something else, or you reassign them to do a different task. Mm-hmm. So you're deferring that money. But in just about all cases, we tell people if we can't save them money, then you don't need our product.
Right. So, but they got to keep that in mind, that this isn't just, I'm just buying new software and then replacing this for that.
Correct. And I've had that happen before where and when it did, I sent a whole team of people that spent like a week there and said, we're going to show these people, this is going to be an institutional change for them, and we're going to transform them, and we're going to show them how to do it. And that usually solves the problem.
Right. So so that means there's a lot of education and a lot of handholding
Correct.
In order to make this work.
Correct. A typical engagement, when somebody comes into us, we're handholding them for about 3 to 4 months after they come into our office.
Right.
We're contacting them, calling them, are you doing this? Have you made this change? Is this working for you? If it's not working, why not? And what can
we do?
Right.
So you're not reacting. You're being proactive to get ahead of it, because you already know that there's going to be challenges in this, so that you're staying ahead of that in order to make this as simple and easy as possible.
Correct. And that's one of the things people, I think, love about us, is that proactiveness that we can work with them. We've just been doing it for so long.
Right.
And we know exactly what we're doing.
And it's built for them.
Correct.
It's not like you're forcing a square peg in a round hole. You built this for their problems.
Right. So when they're building their forecasting or their business intelligence pieces or their financial statements, and they've got a specific statistic they want to look at, it's right there in front of them. They
right.
can say, I want that one. I don't have to create it. There
right.
it is.
I don't
want
have to go and do an Excel kind of equation for this. It's
Correct.
Already in there.
Correct. Our goal is for people to eliminate all Excel that they're using, and they can just use the tool to do it.
Right. And again, this is Alan Reed with M3, and the website is m3as.com. Thank you so much, Alan, for sharing your story today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.